Laura Crane is the first British woman to surf Nazaré, Portugal's infamous 60-foot waves. She's overcome an eating disorder, sepsis, and mental health challenges along the way, and even given up the sport she loves only to return to it recently, where she surprised herself with what she's capable of.
It's kind of an exciting, beautiful, ugly, everything emotion fair.
What in that moment are you doing to get yourself absolutely where you want to be to take that wave on, all 60 foot of it?
Well, I'm under there. There's nothing else I can do. Just know that I'm going to come up, but I just don't know when. And all of us girls, sadly, that were trying to pursue professional, you know, careers in surfing back then, if we looked good in a bikini, that was your value.
How have you sort of overcome all of that? Because it feels like you have a really strong mind. Which feels at odds with the things that you've had to cope with. So, Laura, I want to start with you by talking about what it feels like to sit waiting for the perfect Nazaré wave to take you and what that moment's like looking up at a 50, 60-foot wave. How does that make you feel?
Tiny. Really, really small. Honestly, that's how it feels. But yeah, a mixture of many different emotions and feelings. You put so much effort and time, and there's so many ups and downs just to even get to the moment where there's a big swell and just to be in the water. So to actually be sat there waiting for one is, yeah, it's a mix of emotions from excitement, fear, self-doubt, more excitement, adrenaline, just the want to get the biggest wave of your life. There's almost too many emotions to be able to quieten them, but that's the main thing in that time, really.
So you were the first British surfer to take female surfer to take on this wave. Was that playing on your mind, or is that sort of a sideshow to what was really going on?
Now, honestly, when you're out there, you can't think about what it means for anybody else or what it's going to mean for you to surf that wave. It really is about being present in that moment. I think as soon as you start to try and surf these waves for any other benefit than just the feeling, you start to put yourself in a really dangerous position. So, to be honest, I never went out there with the idea of really breaking any new record or anything like that. It was really just a big calling that I felt that I really kind of wanted to explore and just do it on my own terms this time round and not have sponsors and just do it because it felt right for Laura. So all the things that have kind of come off the back of it have been incredible. But I definitely surf just for the feeling of it.
Okay, so you're sat in the water and you're waiting for the perfect wave. And how long did that take? How long did it take before it happened where you knew, okay, this is the one that I'm going to take on? And just describe to me the process that you go through to prepare. I'd like to break it down physically and mentally, but what in that moment are you doing to get yourself absolutely where you want to be to take that wave on, all 60 foot of it?
I wish I could say that it was super chill and the day was exactly any athlete would like one of the biggest pivotal moments of their career to go. But it was the polar opposite. Honestly, it was my first season. I had a goal of surfing a 30-foot wave this season. So a 60-foot day came within the first 2 months of the season. And I was actually driving safety on a jet ski of Sebastian, who is the world record holder for the men at the moment. And my mentor is his driver. So for tow surfing, which is the big wave surfing, you have to have a driver who tows you into the wave on a jet ski. So I'm in the water thinking there's probably a pretty high chance that today is Sebastian's day and I'm not going to get a wave. I'm just going to sit here, watch and learn. And if the moment comes and we'll see how I feel in the moment and if I'm sort of ready for it, because there is a lot of energy. It goes from being kind of 30 foot and everyone's having a little bit of fun to all of a sudden you're looking at, 45, 60 foot set waves, and it is a completely different environment. There's much less chat in the water, a lot less laughing, a lot less fun. It very quickly becomes really serious. So I was kind of just respecting what everyone was doing and watching and desperate to get one for sure. But I just kind of had to respect the process that this big wave world is very, very, very dangerous. So I sat there patiently waiting, and people kept coming up like, "Oh, have you had one yet?" And I was like, "No, just seeing if I get the opportunity." So with that, Sebastian had two waves, and my mentor called me over and he was like, "Get on the rope now." And I was like, "Oh God, really? Are you sure?" And he's like, "Laura, get on the rope. It's now or never." And I was like, "Okay, cool." Because at this point, I'm kind of like the rookie, you know, I'm the white belt. I'm the one that's like, just got to take any opportunity because it's not a given. I don't own a jet ski yet. And yeah, that was it. Literally 5 minutes later, he was telling me, "You're about to get the biggest wave of your life." And I'm literally sat in the water holding a rope. You can't see anything because you're at water level. So the first time you actually see this mountain of water isn't until he's started accelerating towards, well, basically the cliff. So yeah, that was it. I held on, gave it a big old pull. And yeah, next thing I was charging it down 60-foot wave.
And how fast are you going when you're doing that? When you're coming back down the other side of the wave, how quickly are you going?
They put loads of like kind of studies on it. It all depends massively, obviously, on how many bumps and lumps the wave has, because you kind of need to control your speed a little bit if all of a sudden you're going too fast and there's kind of chops of water in the wave, which effectively are like, I don't know, if you think of skiing or something, when you get a little pile of snow and it just sends you absolutely flying. It's super similar with this big wave stuff. So you've got up to 1 meter chops in the wave. So depending on how many of those are in front of you, you kind of can take more speed or a little bit less speed, or you have to turn around and but it can be, when we're holding on to the jet ski rope, it can be up to anything to 70 kilometers an hour that we're traveling.
Crikey Moses, that is fast. That is so fast. I've got goosebumps just thinking about you doing this. I mean, presumably, like, this is like commitment. You've got to commit to it. I mean, there's no room for, or actually, no thank you, is there? I mean, is there a moment where you could have done that? Or are you just, once you're on that tow rope, you've fully committed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can decide to not let go of the rope and you carry on and the jet ski will kind of take you off. But being one of the only women out there, we're kind of one of four, really, when the biggest set of the wet day comes through, if you're going to let go of that rope, you better be ready for and a backlash from the lads out the back. So, yeah, for me, it was definitely do or die that day.
That's interesting. Okay, so actually that sort of, it's not really peer pressure. Well, maybe it is peer pressure, but that kind of, that's part of it, isn't it? That's part of the sort of driving force to make these things happen.
Yeah, definitely. There's, I mean, a huge element of self-doubt that comes into it, and you're battling that the whole session from start to finish, from the moment that you get on the jet ski in the harbour to the moment that you arrive back there, you are battling your mind. And I think, you know, you can do as much physical training as you want, and obviously that will help how much you trust yourself in those moments to know that you've put the work in. But it does really come down to just that callousing of the mind and just knowing that you can do it if you just kind of keep your mind there and believe. But as soon as you go down that spiral of self-doubt, honestly, it's time to get out, because that is not a place that you can be with a lot of self-doubt.
And have you had those moments of self-doubt before? Have you experienced those, you know, within that environment previously to sort of know the difference?
Definitely. I think less in the big wave world. I think I've always liked a good helping of fear. So big waves have always been something that I'd enjoyed when I was younger, when I was competing more in the kind of competition like side of surfing. But yeah, self-doubt is definitely something I have really struggled with. I think like many other people, and especially many other athletes that I know, it's probably one of our biggest opponents is, you know, to be stronger than those thoughts that tell you that you can't do something that you've trained so hard for. But yeah, I think at this point that I am, I know that that is my kind of biggest hurdle with overcoming anything, whether it's doing my bloody VAT return or whether it's surfing a big wave. I think the thought of it is always worse than the actual reality. And I think about that when I get in the ice bath every morning, and I'm like, I know that just thinking about it is worse than the actual action of doing it. So just kind of, yeah, I think it's the way that you can kind of think about not thinking is something that's really helped me through definitely the last season and training and yeah, just making my mind stronger in those weak moments is yeah, just trying not to think.
So interestingly then, I don't know how you go about preparing for taking on a wave like that, because there's clearly nothing else like it except for smaller waves. So how do you both physically and mentally prepare? Maybe let's take the physical bit first of all. What was it like in the lead up to taking on Nazari, and how did you sort of get your physique where it needed to be so that you knew you were strong enough for the challenge?
Yeah, definitely. I think physically, I'm lucky with my build for big wave surfing. It's all pretty much like a strong lower body, which is something I was kind of blessed with. And yeah, I mean, upper body is also equally as important. That's something that I've been able to pretty easily train. Lots of weight training, very little time in the water, honestly, for this stuff. It really is like a lot of time in the gym when it comes to building your strength. And then it was a lot of time also in the water, obviously, kind of learning how to toe surf, because it is really just a totally different sport. I've, since the age of 12 years old, I've been a professional surfer until the age of kind of 22 when I retired. And I think all of those things, you know, all of those years, yes, they made me feel more comfortable than, you know, somebody who maybe picked it up a year ago. But I do think that yeah, the biggest thing for me was my mind and just knowing and trusting that I was ready for this. The physical part for me was relatively easy. I absolutely love training. I love to see where I can push my body. I've been through a fair few health battles over the years, and I do believe that that's made me stronger and really, really, really pushed me to want to see what I can achieve. So the physical side of it for me was actually really fun. I absolutely loved it. I love the training. I love putting the work in. The mental side has been super interesting. I only finished therapy really about a year ago for my eating disorder, and the things that I learned through that and kind of the tools that I had learned to just be kinder to myself, I think were really, really important in this journey of me kind of now pushing the boundaries. And yes, it's really intense. Yes, it's super hardcore. And there's a lot of egos out there. So to kind of protect your own mind is really, really important. And yeah, it's been lots of meditations. I woke up in the morning before that swell and every other swell that I surfed this winter. And it was, yeah, a meditation. It was a breath work. It was yoga. It was my protein shake. It was the same step-by-step morning routine, definitely, because that would then make me feel like, okay, I know this works, I've done it this amount of times. And yeah, it's kind of just, I guess, like I'm putting a lucky pair of socks on or something.
It's interesting that, isn't it? I mean, any successful athlete you speak to talks about the merits of consistency and routine and habit setting, and it feels like that's what's enabled you to feel safe. Is that accurate? Is that right?
100%. I think anybody that isn't willing to put in the training and is going to put themselves in that environment is on a death wish. It is it's the most scary environment I've ever been in. And I've traveled the world since I was super young, and I've surfed some definitely sketchy waves, but Nazare is without doubt just the sheer power of it. I think if you're willing to put your body under one of those waves, which will happen at some point, you are going to get one on the head, or you're going to get five on the head. And without the training, you cannot trust yourself under there, because the only thing you can do is stay calm. And I remember the World Record Lottery told me at the start of my season, because I asked him, oh, do you train a lot of breath work for obviously like being held under? And he said, no, I train not to fall. And while I'm under there, there's nothing else I can do. Just know that I'm going to come up, but I just don't know when. So it's to stay calm until that point. And that was a really, as much as kind of like a scary message, it was a really important one for me, because it was just knowing that there's nothing you can do more than trust yourself and the training that you've put in. So absolutely, without the training, I think you'd be wild to be out there.
And that happened to you, right? You ended up in a scenario. I read that your jet ski aide had a problem with his jet ski, and it broke down, malfunctioned at some point. So you did end up right underneath the waves for some considerable amount of time. I mean, what on earth was that like? I can imagine it's just like a being in a washing machine cycle on steroids. I mean, what on earth was that like?
I've had a few this first season. It definitely teaches you a few things about yourself while you're under there, that's for sure. But it's like what I was saying with the ice bath. It is, the thought of these things is always worse than the reality so far. And that's the thing I think I love about the ice bath, is then no matter how many times you do it, the thought of it is still hell. It doesn't get any easier. You just get stronger. And it's the same, you know, with anything, whether it's six set waves on the head and each one's keeping you under for 30 seconds. You just have to think about, I'm going to get that breath in between. And, you know, it's a frame of mind. You're either under there and you're hating it. Or for me, I tried to go to a really lovely place. I imagine me and my brother on a road trip. And that's where I am. I'm under there. I just take my mind somewhere else, because there is literally nothing you can do. There's no one coming for you. When the jet ski's gone, it's on you just to survive. So, we all go into our own little worlds under there.
Laura, what I find really fascinating chatting to you is that your mindset is so strong and so powerful and so sure. I can't understand how somebody with that mindset has struggled with some of the issues that you've spoken about before, because a lot of that will be mental health battles or pertaining to an eating disorder or whatever that you've sort of spoken about quite openly before. How have you sort of overcome all of that? Because it feels like you have a really strong mind. Which feels at odds with the things that you've had to cope with.
Thanks. That means a lot, honestly. Thank you. But no, I'm like everyone. I cried to my parents yesterday about having to do my tax return because it was just all too stressful for me. I am a strong person, definitely. But I am not anything different to anybody else when it comes to your everyday stresses. I get triggered by many things like everybody does. But I do believe that all the things that I've been through and the things that I've made it through, whether it was being a young athlete and very overexposed at a young age, or it was an eating disorder, or it was sepsis, whatever it was that kind of I came up head to head with, I've always seen as just part of my kind of calling to whatever is going to lead me into next. And never for a million years, if you had told me 4 years ago even, that I was going to be kind of going for breaking records and trying to surf the biggest waves in the world, I think I probably would have laughed at you. So it's definitely just the journey. And I think you never know kind of what's coming next, but it's just about getting up each day and fighting and seeing, like what you can achieve when you don't have these mental health ties, or just kind of making them your own, I think. And yes, bulimia was honestly one of the most horrible and terrible things that I wouldn't want my worst enemy to have to deal with, any eating disorder. But I do believe that it's made me this strong woman that I am today, and has given me more than anything just this drive to inspire other young women that you're more than just what you look like. And if you've got a dream, go for it, and don't let society or social medias or your peers ever tell you that you can't do something that you feel is destined for you.
See, this sort of image you have of this sort of young girl surfing, superstar at a really early age, beautiful, got everything at your feet. And then you're battling with this whole other piece behind the scenes. I mean, how that, of course, is a juxtaposition in itself. How unlike yourself did you feel in those years? How out of yourself did you feel during that time when you were sort of, being a poster girl for surfing effectively, when actually behind the scenes you were dealing with all of this anguish? I mean, what did that feel like during those years?
Really tough, because I was 12 years old. I got sponsored by Billabong, which for me was literally my lifelong dream. So to get that, I think at such a young age, felt like, well, I've got everything now, I just have to do what I have to do to keep it. And I think being so young, you are willing to just say yes. And I do think the brands knew that at that time. And, You know, I'd grown up as a tomboy. I was not somebody who was into necessarily wearing cutesy bikinis and doing all the girly stuff. But it was definitely apparent that that was where my value lied for these brands. And all of us girls, sadly, that were trying to pursue professional, you know, careers in surfing back then, if we looked good in a bikini, that was your value. And as sad as that is, again, it's made me who I am today and given me this kind of power to want to inspire younger women to be more than just that. And I think there's always a side of me that wishes that I could have seen that for what it was in that time. But I also know that there wasn't a space for us to have a voice then. And it has taken time and it has taken us all to grow up and to realize that certain things weren't right. And to finally feel like I'm getting the respect in the sport that I was meant to so many years ago is an incredible personal achievement for me as just a girl from Devon. Is really nice to kind of, have people just kind of come up to me and say that what I'm doing is inspiring them to go out and do something that they thought maybe they couldn't do is way, way more, of an achievement for me than any poster I've been in, that's for bloody sure.
And it feels like you kind of found yourself again. I mean, is that right? Because it feels like you retired from the sport and did this whole Love Island thing and whatever came off the back of that. And then it feels like your pull to the ocean was always there and it's where you went back to. And do you feel happy? Do you finally feel like you've got yourself back on track and you are where you want to be?
100%, definitely. I feel for the first time ever, I'm the Laura I was always meant to be and the one that I always wanted to be when I was a young girl, when I'm just surfing and enjoying the sport for what it was. And that is a beautiful thing because surfing has always been the thing that has kept me grounded and been there for me when I've been struggling with my mental health or literally struggling with anything. It was always my safe space. So that was definitely not a nice thing to feel like I had lost. But, I went into Love Island trying to be, I think, the woman that I am now. I was only 22. So, there's an element of that you've got these big dreams of inspiring women to be, sporty and a bit more athletic. And, I wanted to go into that show to really be who 15-year-old Laura needed to see in that show. And it was, maybe a bit more of a masculine build. It was not so glammed up. I used to sit in that room for like 2 hours while they used to get changed and be like, I don't even know what you guys are doing. I'm here. And I think they were all just moments of me really choosing myself and being like, okay, that's what the world, want to see from this show, but I'm going to stay true to me. And I think through that whole experience, I did myself proud because I did stay true to who I was and I didn't conform. And that's something that I can always hold my head high with, I guess, and know that this journey started there, and it was very, very apparent to me really quickly on that was not an industry I felt comfortable or happy in. And I started doing some influencer stuff that also felt just very unfulfilling for me. And I was grateful for the journey. I was grateful for everybody that I'd met. But the ocean is definitely my home.
And was it like a triggering experience? Because that whole premise of that show is based on the way you look. Beautiful bodies and that whole jazz. And that's fine for some people, right? But clearly that's a world that you'd already been exposed to that you weren't comfortable with. Was it sort of a triggering experience that, on the other side of it, you needed to just, get yourself back to the ocean waves and back to some sort of form of your own version of sanity?
Yeah, I was living in Portugal at the time when I actually went to the show. So I don't think I actually knew. Yeah, I don't think I really knew the magnitude that show was, honestly. And it wasn't until we left the show, and bearing in mind, I ended up being like one of the last five couples. It was wild, just absolutely wild. I was slingshotted into this world that was so far away from how I had kind of grown up. And I had more followers, I think, going in there than most of the people, because I'd been on Instagram since I was like 15 years old. We had like 10,000 followers overnight when it first kind of downloaded. So I think I'd always had people have their opinions on what I was doing or have their opinions on how I was looking since I was really young. So that side of it for me actually didn't really bother me. You know, I came out and there was lots of Daily Mail articles saying that I didn't have my nails done and that I wasn't glam enough and that I had, you know, that my build was very masculine and my shoulders were big, which had been huge hang-ups for me anyway. And they were real insecurities for me that I wasn't particularly feminine and all of these things that I was like proud to be when I went in there. I definitely, when I came out, was like, oh, wow, like they just pinpointed all the things that I was insecure about. Even though they were the things that I was trying to really show off and be like proud of. Yeah, it's just not something that show really wanted to perceive in a positive frame, I suppose. But again, I just don't think I was in the right space in time to be able to relay the message. So yeah, I just had to go surf Nazra and surf a couple of 60 footers and get my voice heard like that. So could have done that the whole time, but dang.
And what's next? Because I don't know how you beat that. I mean, are you sort of set on permanently terrifying yourself with the next big challenge? I mean, where do you go from here?
Yeah, I mean, this first season has been insane. If I was literally having this conversation with my parents last night, I was like, not even a year ago, I didn't even know anything about tow surfing, like not one thing. And now all of a sudden, I'm kind of looking at doing a whole winter of being competing on the world tour and just, yeah, I'm, you know, one of the top five female big wave surfers already. So for me, like, this was what I was meant to do. I've tried so many things in my life and I've given it, you know, kind of a bit of a half heart for many of them. But this one is definitely what I was put on this planet to do.
This is a really dark question, but I want to ask it. When you're in that moment where you are looking up at that 60-foot wave and it's enormous and you probably feel tiny, as you've spoken about before, do you ever feel, what if I don't come out of this on the other side okay? Does that ever cross your mind?
Yes, that does come into your head. But it's a really weird one. I think the thing that you're battling the whole time is whether it's your gut telling you that this isn't the wave to go on, that something's not right, maybe that there's a big lump through the middle of it and it's going to end up being like a kind of shelf that just drops away. Or is it just fear? And it's just your, you know, mind telling you, God, this is really, really scary and I'm scared, rather than that something really bad is going to happen. I think it's definitely a balance between your gut and fear. Like, and knowing the difference between those two is obviously really, really important in what we do, because there is times where you do have to say, no, this isn't the wave. And there's times where you probably should have said, no, this isn't the wave, and you still go anyway. And you have to be ready to deal with what's coming next. I think anybody that enters the water in Nazare that isn't kind of somewhat, you know, come to terms with the fact that you might not come out of there, and you know, you shouldn't really be out there at all, I think, because there is a lot of risk. And I think if you're kind of just ignoring the you know, the amount of risk that there is, that's when really bad things can happen. And you've got to be really on the ball. Like, it is no joke. You've got one shot to get on the back of that jet ski at the end of the wave. And yeah, if you kind of mess it up, then that's the difference between you leaving the water and yeah, I'm not leaving the water, I suppose. So it's you know, an element of knowing how dangerous the situations that you are in, and thinking in the moment logically, and being very present and not stressing about the things that could happen, but you know, knowing that there is consequences is really important.
See, for most people who are tackling that gut versus fear debate, which is raging in a lot of people's heads a lot of the time, they're not probably contemplating what could be a very dangerous wave hitting them on the head, and then whatever happens, happens. But for most people, that is a constant daily debate, isn't it? This sort of gut versus fear piece. How do you learn to sort of know the difference? How do you train yourself to know the difference?
That's a good question. A lot of meditation, honestly. I think I've learned so much through going inside my brain and learning it and finding out what triggers it and the moments where I doubt myself more than others and knowing what those triggers are and knowing what those kind of crevices that all those fears kind of hide in are the things that kind of make you be able to pull it out of the bag when it really matters. And yeah, just the more you know yourself, the more you know your gut feelings, the more you'll know your irrational and irrational fears. And I think if you can kind of feel safe in those moments of fear, that's a kind of a real good little superpower to have and to be able to channel your fear into power is an amazing thing. And I think it's where, people do incredible things when they're scared. And yeah, I mean, there is always an element of fear, and I think it's kind of a exciting, beautiful, ugly, everything emotion, fear, but one that I think if you can make it your friend, then fear is a pretty good guy.
That's an interesting concept, making fear your friend. We might come back to that a little bit later. But in terms of what you see out there on the ocean waves, because obviously you're super close to it, it's that your field of play, it's where you live and breathe and work. What are your feelings around ocean conservation and ocean health and the way in which the direction of travel for that? Because many people who sort of live and breathe and spend their time on the ocean waves are really worried about what's happening there. What's your sort of take on what's going on out there?
Yeah, it's petrifying. I mean, as you said, we live on the water. Since the age of, 8 years old, I've literally spent more hours probably in the water than out of it. And there is massive changes happening that we obviously, as surfers, we're seeing in front of us day in, day out. Water levels are rising. The plastic pollution is devastating. The coral reefs, there's just so many things that we visually see among all the things that we also don't see. In the UK, we've got a real issue with raw sewage we let into our water. So for me, the fear that someday maybe I can't enter the water or maybe my kids can't enter the water just to enjoy it is really scary. It's a place that's helped me through so many mental health struggles, and it's a place that I go and spend with my family and my friends. And the thought that maybe one day we won't have an ocean to enjoy, let alone an ocean to kind of keep our planet afloat, and it creates 50% of our oxygen. And I think everybody needs to care about the ocean, whether you've grown up on the beach or you grow up in a city or a desert or wherever it is. It does have an impact on us all. So yes, we are very passionate about it as surfers because we're the ones that are seeing it kind of day in, day out. And don't get me wrong, there's also lots of things that us as surfers can still be doing to, lessen our impact and the materials that we use from wetsuits and surfboards and all the technologies that we're kind of trying to pioneer for hopefully other products to take on. And it does lie with us. We're responsible for kind of, yeah, protecting the ocean is what brings us so much joy. So as a surfer, it's something that we are all very passionate about, and especially in the town where I grew up, we do massive activations in trying to inspire the younger generation to care more for their environment. And yeah, just I think knowledge is so much power. It is really, really easy to just kind of hide from it and not want to know the situation we're in. But actually, the more you learn about it and the more you learn about what you can do to help, it kind of, it's fulfilling, I think, to give something back to the environment for sure.
And also, talking about the subject of surfing moving forward, it's now part of the Olympic Games cycle. So Paris 2024 beckons, and surfing part of the mix there. I mean, how exciting is it for you to sort of see that come to fruition? And would you ever go back? Could you ever go back and consider yourself an Olympic contender?
Honestly, amazing that surfing's made to the Olympics. I think, for us as athletes, it's an amazing thing to feel like our sport has finally got the recognition to be a sport and not just a bunch of beach bums enjoying the waves. So that's been, yeah, huge for us and a real kind of big step forward, I think, in us being able to get proper sponsorships. And yeah, like the support that just wasn't in our sport even 5 years ago, it's amazing. And it just means that, you know, the likes of me that want to go and push the boundaries in other sides of surfing, there's also a lot more support for that as well. Would I go back to, you know, competitive surfing in that kind of space? I think I've done my time there. There's definitely moments where I miss the competitive side of it, which is why I'm really excited to push the competitive big wave stuff. But yeah, I think for me, the adrenaline of big wave surfing is pretty hard to beat.
That sounds about right, and a good place to leave it. Laura, thanks so much for chatting to me today. I massively appreciate it. And I'm still in complete awe of how you can take on a 60-foot wave, but crack on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.